This is Classic Grain number 30, posted December 13, 2020. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR. In 1985, Westlink, better known as the amateur radio newsline today, was in financial quicksand. Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, co-founded Westlink in 1977. 8 years later, RAIN founder Hap Holly, KC9RP, recorded his first interview with Bill, his mentor. In this Classic RAIN hamcast, we'll excerpt some audio from that conversation. Hap's first interview with Bill, one of the earliest Hap recorded.
The first thing I've got to say at the outset is that soliciting funds on the air is a no-no. Okay, we've talked to the FCC people. As you know, we work with the FCC people. They give us announcements to put out. So we're on pretty good terms with them. And I've talked with the FCC people, and it is against the rules to solicit funds on the air, straight out. So I'm not going to get on here and say, hey, you send your cars and greenbacks, folks, you know. Rather, what I would like to say is this. Our bulletin stations hear a portion of the newscast that the average listener doesn't. The bulletin station is the person who calls up one of our automated lines and records it and plays it back. We have at the head end something called a closed circuit. This is an advisory to our bulletin stations, and this is how we get the word out of schedule change or a financial problem, and this is what we've been doing. This is how the information gets out. And my suggestion is, if you've got a bulletin station who's a member of your club, have them at the next club meeting explain what we have explained on the closed circuit, which is basically we're a nonprofit corporation there for the purpose of disseminating news. And he can explain better and in a more, let's say, legal way than I can here on the air as to what our needs really are.
Bill, if you're a nonprofit organization run by hams, for hams, and disseminating information to hams, why can't you solicit?
That's a good question. And I've asked this of the FCC people in D.C., and as I say, I talk to them on a regular basis. Basically, there's right now a fear in Washington that anything to do in any way that might show pecuniary interest in any way, taboo. We just don't want to take the chance of putting a repeater owner-operator in jeopardy of his or her license. You know, 99.9% of the FCC engineers are not going to care. But unfortunately, a lot of regulations are left to local interpretation, and you get one engineer who feels it's a violation and cites somebody, we'd feel responsible. So very simply, if we don't go and do it, we're not going to get anybody into trouble. And that's basically our morality. We're trying to perform a service, and as such, we don't want to get anybody into trouble in doing it.
The Westlink Amateur Radio News is unlike other news services in that it is simply a phone call away. In Chicago, there are more than half a dozen repeater and supplant stations that carry Westlink regularly. But according to your literature, some 2,000 stations carry it nationally.
That's an estimate, okay, and I'll tell you how we make that estimate. Once a year, Carl Pagel, N6BVU, runs a computerized survey for us, okay? It is a known fact that you can talk to anybody on Madison Avenue will tell you that you nominally get a 4% return on a poll. If you supply a self-addressed stamped envelope, you'll get an 8% return. If you do not supply the self-addressed stamped envelope, you'll get a 4% return. Judging in projections, with the numbers that we get back, we estimate that we are on approximately 2,000, and this is a rough guess, approximately 2,000 amateur stations throughout the United States and Canada, by the way. I found out that we are carried in Canada, plus HF bulletin stations such as W7UU, Lou Huber up in Seattle, who's been with us almost since day one. We are also an excerpted on some commercial radio stations in Chicago and San Francisco. We have an exchange program with Radio Netherlands where we provide them with our programming in exchange for copies of media network programs that have to do with amateur radio or computers. We have the rights to use each other's material, so it gets international airplay.
Phil, why don't we take a closer look inside and see some of the operations of Westlink. Could you give us a quick one-week tour of Westlink?
Let us start on Friday afternoon at approximately 3 p.m. when I get to work. At that point, I have with me a completed newscast for the following week. And as soon as I get a couple of things out of the way, that tape goes on the air. So that, to me, is the completion of a newscast. Saturday and Sunday, I usually spend sharing the time between my wife and sitting and reading anything that's come in the mail within the past 48 hours that seems to be background story material. Monday, I'm on the phone with usually to the FCC, the ARRL, in Newington, Connecticut. And when I say I'm on the phone to the FCC, this is where it gets complex, because when you call the FCC, there's no one telephone number you can call. If you want to talk to the personal radio branch, you call one number. If you want to call the Field Operations Bureau, it's another number. If you want to call the enforcement branch, who lately we've been doing a lot of telephone calling to, it's still another number. So all in all, calling the FCC can be as many as 7 or 8 phone calls. And those are 3,000 miles, prime time, on AT&T to the East Coast. The league is a lot easier. Luckily, they have one phone number. This is normally done Monday, sometimes on Tuesday, if there's a carryover. Wednesday, I am usually writing the script. If I'm not writing it, the only other person who would be Bert Hicks, WB67QV. And on Thursday evening, we record. And when I say that there are phone calls made, it's more than just calling the FCC and the ARRL. For instance, we're in the process of following up on a very fascinating story dealing with a ham who was put off the air by the FCC for interfering with the cable television system. Well, so far I've made calls to the FCC, to the cable company. By the way, the cable company is very uncooperative. They're not interested in talking to us. And to the ham involved. Each call probably was an hour and a half involved, long distance, coast to coast. And it's very easy for those bills to mount up. And how do you get out of that? 10 seconds, 12 seconds of good material. It's the same as working at a radio or television news station. The only difference is we work on a much tighter budget and are devoted mainly towards amateur radio.
I understand you've had some real problems recently with the U.S. Postal Service.
Oh, God almighty, yes. The U.S. Mail Service, and I hate to condemn a group, because when I condemn a group, it's unfair. But the U.S. Postal Service sometimes leaves something to be desired, and I have found that when there's something that is a priority, and don't take this as my endorsement of a product or a service, but man, nobody beats Federal Express. Unfortunately, they're very expensive. We're supposed to get overnight service, U.S. Postal overnight, guaranteed next day. And normally, it is 3 to 4 days from the time Jim Davis will send something out of Charleston, West Virginia, to Los Angeles. It is at least 3 days to get to my house, guaranteed overnight. So there's something wrong with the Postal Service. So when we know there's a priority, it goes as a Federal Express shipment. It's the only way I'll trust it anyway.
Well, if the U.S. mail is so unreliable and Federal Express is so expensive, why not do the obvious? Return reports via AT&T. After all, by the time the average ham hears the weekly Westwood broadcast bill, the audio has been reduced to phone line quality anyway.
I can only say that I believe in quality. I am a broadcaster by profession. I am talking to you from the studios of a major Los Angeles television station and teleproduction house, a place where virtually a third of the network television shows that you people watch in the Midwest and all over the country are made. We pride ourselves on quality, and as such, that quality tends to rub off on the way you do things. The reason that I tend to want to work with the original tape is simply because of the quality. That's number one. But there is a second reason. Normally, in the field, the actuality material, the interview pieces, are not put in. Those are done at this end, in post-production, okay? After we record on Thursday, that tape goes home with me. I have a complete studio at the house, and I spend about 7 hours. Normally, I go to sleep around 5 o'clock, 5:36 in the morning, on a morning where I am editing the newscast, because it's not a clean sweep, as you'll say. You have to take out the mistakes that the announcers make. You have to edit in the actuality stuff, and invariably we run long. So that has to be timed down, and sometimes timing down means cutting out a sentence here or a word there, so that this thing never runs over 10 minutes and 30 seconds. The reason for that is a technical one. The machines we use for playing it back cannot go more than 10 minutes and 30 seconds.
You're listening to excerpts from a 1985 interview with Westlink Radio's Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, by RAIN's founder, Hap Holly, KC9RP. We'll resume excerpts from that interview after you identify your station. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Classic Rain from www.therainreport.com.
Getting back to the financial support of Westlink, how much support does Westlink receive from the ARRL and from ham radio equipment manufacturers?
The only donations from manufacturers that I can remember, there's only been two. We got a check recently from the people at World Radio News, We got one from Gordon West Radio School, and it's interesting. Gordon is one of our reporters, as many people may be aware, and he insisted on donating to us. Those are the only amateur organizations that have ever donated. And frankly, as far as taking funds from a manufacturer, per se, on a large scale, the answer would be we would not take it, unless they would be willing to say that, hey, there's no strings attached. I would accept something like from Gordon, because I know Gordon West well enough, where I know that it's just a straight donation with no interest other than helping keep the thing running. The same with people from World Radio. Armin Noble and crew are totally dedicated to amateur radio. They're up in Sacramento, California. As far as the AWRL, no, we have never received any funding from them, nor have we asked them for any. As a matter of fact, quite the opposite. We have offered on occasion to supply them with dubs of our tapes so that they could use them on W1AW in the hope of saving them some money in production costs. But to date, they have never even said yes, no, or maybe on it. But the offer is still there. If they ever want them, we'd be glad to send them a tape every week and help them out. They are our national organization, and we support them 100%. I mean, we will criticize them if they're wrong, but we also believe that when you criticize somebody, you have an obligation to give them an alternative. And if you ever listen to our stories, you know that when we do criticize, we do offer an alternative, be it the AWRL, the FCC, or anyone else. That's our motto. You have that responsibility. Amateur radio is one of the few hobbies in this world that has built-in responsibility with it. And that responsibility comes because of something called a license, and that every ham has to have. So I often wonder if amateur radio really is a hobby in the truest sense of the word, the way stamp collecting is. I don't think it is. I think it's far more than that.
Phil, in raising money to keep Westlink on the air, some have run into brick walls when it comes to receiving donations or even significant discounts from ham manufacturers. Now, as I recall from my early days as a ham, almost 20 years ago, such was not the case.
First of all, I can emphasize with you on the fact that manufacturers do not donate like they used to, but you also have to look at it from another point of view. When I was younger, when I was first writing for 73 Magazine, Lafayette Radio was very much involved. Some people may remember Lafayette Radio. They were very much involved in amateur radio. And being in New York, and they were headquartered in New York, and they knew who I was, and they knew who my partner Larry Lee was. Every time they'd come out with a new piece of ham gear, they'd call us up, and we were the ones who would get the first samples off the boat, and we would do the reviews for the magazines, etc. There was a time when manufacturers were very free in giving away gear. Unfortunately, those times have changed. And if you're not a Dayton Hamvention or an Atlanta Hamfest, the chances are you're not going to get a donation. Now, don't hold this against the manufacturers. Their costs are horrendous, and there is not very much markup in amateur gear. That's why so many companies have bailed out, the most recent being R.L. Drake. I'm a proud possessor of what will probably become a collector's item someday, because I am an owner of Drake gear, and I always will love that gear. I mean, it's some of the best ever built. But Yaesu, Kenwood, Icom, if those companies gave away something to everybody, they'd never sell a radio. They wouldn't have enough to sell. I know the pressure that they are put under, and that they have to put certain restraints on, and that's one of the problems. So I have to defend them, knowing the situation.
Bill, I'd like to know a little more about you. I know you're, of course, editor and producer of Westlink Report and Westlink Amateur Radio News, but what is your background?
Broadcasting has been my life, I guess. My mother and father wanted a doctor or a lawyer, very typical New York family. And they got a broadcast brat who moved to the West Coast and has been here for the past 12, 15 years. And most of it in the broadcast industry. I'm with Metro Media Radio and Television Corporation in Los Angeles, where I am right now as I'm talking to you. I am a specialist in videotape recorder maintenance, specialize in three-quarter inch U-matic, which is the Sony format used for ENG, and very shortly you'll be involved with Betacam. Plus, I work on 1-inch, 2-inch automation systems, ACR25s, and things like that.
You've obviously put a lot of time producing the Westlink Amateur Radio News. Who else deserves a lot of credit for making Westlink the cornerstone of amateur radio that it is today?
If there are two people who are responsible for the success of the Westlink Amateur Radio News, they are Roy Neal, K6DUE, and Alan Call, W6RCL, because when I got involved in this, I did not know news writing. I was a magazine writer. I had been with 73 Magazine since day one, since it had started, but I didn't know how to write hard news to do a newscast. Thanks to Roy and thanks to Al, I learned how. I say that they're the ones who were kind of responsible for this, and I'm a product of their abilities, I guess.
Westlink has traditionally reported the news without excessive editorializing, but recently some have complained that the weekly broadcasts have become far too politicized, especially concerning the 20 KC 2-meter band plan.
It probably is, because we're human beings. If we weren't human beings, I would have to say you're wrong. But we're human beings. I have my feelings about certain things, and since I write most of the scripts, I guess my feelings on certain things are going to show up. I'm not going to deny that. Let me take a very good example of this. We've been criticized for our coverage and handling of the 20 kilohertz versus 15 kilohertz repeater battle. And I call it a battle because, bottom line, it is a battle. There are three competing systems, and everybody says you're spending so much time hailing the people who are going 20 KC, and you're condemning the people who are going 15 KC or who have gone 15 KC. I have to say, in part, they're probably right. Because while the 20 KC forces were out making news, were hustling and letting us know what was happening, and we went to try and find out from people who were involved with 15 kilohertz band planning, the people at 15 kilohertz said, oh, we're not interested in talking because it doesn't have any meaning. They're not going to go anyplace. And then all of a sudden, as area after area started to adopt it, a lot of areas that were involved with 15 got real scared real quick. And that's when the condemnation of our coverage started. But really, if those people we had called and asked for their opinions had given us some input way back when, they would have had equal time. We want to give people equal time, but they got to give us the chance to do it. And the only way that we can do it is if they provide us with the news. But when you go ask people and they say, we have no comment, or we're just not interested, or they laugh at you and they say, it's not going to go anywhere, and then turn around and get scared and say, oh my God, it's on us. We report the news. We don't make the news. Yeah, I would have to say sometimes we seem biased, but in the long run, maybe we're looking into the future a little bit and seeing things that the average ham doesn't see, and maybe we're trying to alert you guys out there as to what the future holds in store, whether it's going to be 2015 or 7.5 KC, who knows. If I was to look into the future, I would have to say if the nation stays with 15 KC, once we run out of frequency, 7.5 KC is the split will be the obvious next step. But people will tell me now I'm crazy. I retort by saying that I'm the guy who put up the nation's first 15 KC split repeater, so take that for what it's worth. But yes, we try to be objective, we try our best to be objective, but we're human beings, and if we fail, we're the first to admit it, and I'm the first to admit it. I'm not that proud.
And that concludes our excerpts from an interview with Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, co-founder and executive producer of Westlink Radio in 1977. Westlink was renamed the Amateur Radio Newsline in the late 1980s. Bill wrote many of the stories appearing in Westlink and Newsline until his passing in 2015. He was one of two hams that mentored Hap Holly, KC9RP, in the 1980s. As a result, Hap produced his Rain Report podcasts from 1990 to mid-2019, archives of which are still posted on therainreport.com. The Classic Rain Hamcast is copyright 1985-2020 Rain. All rights reserved. Classic Rain Hamcast number 31 is slated to post December 26th. In the meantime, don't forget the 3 W's. Wear your mask, wash your hands, and watch your distance. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, 73, and keep on hamming.